I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, you're grounded. A travel nightmare for hundreds of thousands of people as a fire forces the closure of Heathrow Airport. Face to face.
If you have a question, we can address that in the question period.
Paid for by Israel.
Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are receiving an earful from voters. We have reaction from Capitol Hill. Dinner and a movie. A new film now in theaters examines The Last Supper. We hear from the executive producer. Plus, a really bright idea. The Vatican makes a major announcement about the Dome of St. Peter's Basilica. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, thousands of passengers face mass confusion in London after a fire at an electrical substation knocked out power at Heathrow Airport. Frustrated flyers were left waiting for flights, with some even being turned around right in midair.
Hi, I'm on the Delta flight 10 from Minneapolis to London. And a couple hours ago, right as we were about to leave Newfoundland, we were rerouted back to Minneapolis.
More than 1,000 flights to and from Heathrow were affected by the outage, with impacts likely to last for several days as passengers try to reschedule their travel. Authorities don't know what caused the fire, but so far have found no evidence that it was suspicious. Residents in West London describe hearing a loud and large explosion followed by a fireball and clouds of smoke. Some service has resumed at the airport. And joining us now to discuss this and more is Dr. Sheldon Jacobson, an expert in airport security and safety, as well as a professor of computer science at the University of Illinois. Dr. Jacobson, great to be with you. At this point, we know that around more than 1,000 flights to and from Heathrow have been affected by this fire. And as we know, it's one of the busiest airports in the world. Talk to us about the ripple effect this is going to have.
This is a tremendous event, and we don't realize it as much until you're in an airplane and you're headed to Heathrow on an international flight, and you realize you're not going to be landing there. You may be landing at Charles de Gaulle in France, in Paris, or you may be going up to Glasgow. This is a major disruption, and it's a critical infrastructure, our air system, and right now London Heathrow is in the epicenter of this disruption.
Yeah, and have we ever seen anything like this before happen in an airport?
This is unprecedented. We have seen back in Atlanta back in 2017 where they had a very similar incident with a fire at a power station generator for the airport, and it shut it down for half a day, and it disrupted over 100,000 passengers there. So these things do occur, but they are not very common, and that's the good thing.
Yeah, that is the good thing. I know police are saying that counterterrorism detectives are leading the investigation because of their ability to find the cause quickly. However, really no suggestion of foul play at the moment. What are your thoughts on all of this?
Once again, our critical infrastructure needs attention. And when you have a power grid which feeds our digital economy, whether it's airports, whether it's our financial system, whether it's hospitals, schools, or even just the home that you live in, if we don't have power, we cannot function today. Think about our smartphones. If we don't have the power to juice it up, what's going to happen? This is the critical infrastructure. And this is a wake-up call to focus on the fact that we have to continue to modernize it and ensure that it's available when we need it all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about the ripple effects of all this. Also, there's a significant monetary loss from all this as well. Let's talk about that, how it's affecting the passengers and also the airlines.
But when you have 200,000 people who are going to be affected today in and out of London Heathrow, even at $1,000 each, we're talking about close to $250 million of direct cost. But then there's the indirect cost, the concerns. All of these things could run close to, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars spread across many days and many organizations. Liability is a big issue here.
Absolutely. Any actions that could be taken to prevent something like this from happening again anywhere?
We have to continue to realize that our critical infrastructure, because we take it for granted, doesn't mean it needs to be left alone. It has to be continued to be upgraded. Research is needed to continue to develop new technologies. This is all critical. And if we ignore it, incidents like this time it's Heathrow. Next time it could be JFK International. It could be Atlanta Hartsfield again. It could be any airport in the United States. that's something we do not want to have.
No, we do not. Dr. Jacobson, thank you so much for your time and your insights. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our President Donald Trump makes what he calls a very exciting announcement from the Oval Office, the F-47 fighter jet sixth generation. The president calls it a beautiful number, and now Boeing will build the Air Force's future fighter jet. President Trump says that it has been in the works for a long period of time. Also a topic of discussion, Elon Musk's visit to the Pentagon. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Good evening. We'll start with the F-47. It's called Next Generation Air Dominance. Now, President Donald Trump did not reveal a price tag, but it's being developed with China in mind.
The F-47 pictured behind him, President Donald Trump tells reporters in the Oval Office,
the F-47 will be the most advanced, most capable, most lethal aircraft ever built.
The president says the F-47 is equipped with state-of-the-art stealth technology and is virtually unseeable.
Nothing in the world comes even close to it. This plane flies with drones. It flies with many, many drones, as many as you want, and it's a technology that's new.
Also in the room, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth and two Air Force generals.
Now we have the F-47, which sends a very direct, clear message to our allies that we're not going anywhere, and to our enemies that we will be able to project power around the globe unimpeded for generations to come.
We believe that this provides more lethality, it provides more capability, more modernized capability in a way that is built to adapt.
Meanwhile, Elon Musk visiting the Pentagon today. President Trump said Musk was there to discuss reducing costs, which he's been working on through the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. And while introducing the new fighter jet, Trump shot down news reports that the SpaceX and Tesla owner would be briefed on how the United States would fight a hypothetical war with China.
Nobody believed that story. People that, when I first called, they laughed when they heard this story. Nobody believed it, that the Pentagon was giving him a briefing on what war with China would look like, and he has business. No, they made that up because it's a good story to make up. They're very dishonest people.
Now back to the F-47, President Trump said an experimental version of the aircraft has been flying secretly for about the last 5 years, adding that it has unprecedented power and that no other nation in the world can compete with it. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Our U.S. lawmakers are in their home states during this week-long break, and many are holding town halls, but some of the meetings are getting out of control. Frustrated constituents are pressing lawmakers on everything from DOGE to Democratic plans to fight back against President Trump. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has that story.
Good evening. People are showing up in droves to these town halls, grilling members of Congress and venting their frustrations. The outbursts resemble the protests during President Trump's first administration, and many of them are directing their anger at Republicans.
From an immigrant from South Africa who wasn't elected!
I get it. There's a lot of people in this room that don't support what DOGE is doing. But for the first time, we are making some progress identifying places that we can reduce the budget.
But Democrats aren't off the hook either.
You are a button, dude. Paid for by APAC.
You believe
a
that. You believe that.
A foreign entity.
You believe
what
that.
Have you done
it doesn't
to this
make
country?
It true.
You got to wait your turn. You got to wait your turn. That's not going to work. That's not going to work. That is not going to work. That is not going to work. I'm going to answer his question. That's not going to work. That's not going to work. It's not going to work. You can stand there and yell as long as you want. It's not going to work.
Republican congressman had a similar experience. He says he will continue to hold town halls, but thinks people should come with an open mind.
I believe that we all need to make sure that we're speaking from the standpoint of what actually has happened and what's taking place, as opposed to listening to this political tripe.
Some Republicans accuse Democrats of intentionally disrupting town halls.
These things have become unbelievably chaotic. These folks, many of them are actually paid protesters. About half of the protesters we were able to track to outside of our district. They're not even constituents of ours.
House Speaker Mike Johnson is urging Republicans not to hold public meetings.
They're professional protesters. So why would we give them a forum to do that right now? The best thing that our members can do is communicate directly, frequently, consistently with their constituents.
The House Democratic leader says Republicans need to take responsibility.
What's wrong with y'all? You don't need to send paid protesters into your town hall meetings. The American people are with us all across the country. People are rising up.
As for future town halls, House GOP campaign leaders are recommending their members consider virtual town halls. They wrote on X that using technology makes it, quote, a lot easier. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Just hours after President Trump expressed optimism about peace in Ukraine, a Russian drone attack is launched against the port city of Odessa. At least three people were injured. The attacks targeted a residential building and a shopping center. Despite the violence, peace talks are set to resume on Monday in Saudi Arabia. Today, EWTN spoke with Archbishop Boris Gutsiak, Ukrainian Archeparchy of Philadelphia, about the war and possible peace.
Whether I believe it's going to happen, I'm very doubtful, because Putin has not retracted any statements. He's not taken any steps backward. And he, in his 25 years, has shown that he just keeps plowing forward.
And His Excellency spoke more on the situation in Ukraine. To see the full interview, including his take on what he calls a crime against humanity, be sure to tune in to EWTN News in Depth tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. All right, now to the Middle East, where Israeli forces are moving deeper into Gaza in an attempt to force Hamas to release the remaining hostages. Israeli officials say the operations will continue, quote, with increasing intensity until the hostages are released. This comes as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's attempt to fire the country's domestic security chief hits a setback. The Supreme Court ordered a temporary halt to his dismissal until an appeal can be heard. Sudan's military claims a major victory over paramilitary rebels by retaking the seat of the country's government. Soldiers celebrate inside the Republican palace in Khartoum. The victory comes after 2 years of fighting. The retaking of the heavily damaged building is a symbolic victory against the paramilitary rebel forces. Fighting is likely to continue in other parts of the North African nation. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including a saintly doctor. Today is World Down Syndrome Day. We'll tell you how a Catholic doctor made a huge difference for many, and why it opened the door to canonization. And the Irish spirit comes to the Eternal City, how they remember an Irish priest who went up against the Nazis. Welcome back. Today is World Down Syndrome Day. In a post on X, Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. called for the celebration of kids and adults with Down syndrome, stressing that every life is precious, full of promise, and worthy of protection. The date, 321, symbolizes the triplication of the 21st chromosome, the genetic cause of Down syndrome. It was discovered by Catholic doctor Jerome Lejeune, who spent his life researching ways to help people with Down syndrome and advocating for his patients. In 2021, Pope Francis advanced Lejeune's cause for canonization when the Catholic Church recognized his heroic virtues and declared him venerable. Well, despite the strides Dr. Lejeune made in reducing the stigma surrounding the genetic disorder, sadly, many people with Down syndrome still face discrimination. But one little boy and his family are working to change that.
Because I know, at the end of the day, my value doesn't come from what I can do. It comes from who I am, a human being created in the image and likeness of God. The truth is, having an extra chromosome isn't an impediment, it's an enhancement.
And that little beautiful boy. And that was Will Dobb, otherwise known as Iron Will. And his mother, Kathy, joins us now. She's also the director of Team Iron. Well, Kathy, great to be with you today. I know the video was made last year for World Down Syndrome Day. Tell us more about Will and, you know, why he's so special to you and why you created Team Iron Will.
So Will is our eighth child. He's 4 and a half now. And when he was born, we had always been pro-life. We So we accepted the diagnosis. We were excited to bring him into our family, into the world. But holding him for the first time, there was this realization that he is rare. He is, you know, that people are, over 67% of people choose abortion when they find out their child has Down syndrome. So it was like, it became personal for us. And we really wanted to do something to help further, you know, the cause, the celebration of Down syndrome, but also help families who were struggling. So we started a ministry called Team Iron Will, and we help equip families with medical equipment, therapy equipment. We host webinars and do things like that. And our mission is to help everyone see the intrinsic value and worth of every human being with Down syndrome.
Oh, Kathy, I love looking at those pictures of your beautiful family and Will. I mean, it makes me cry. It's adorable. You mentioned the statistics of the babies that are prenatally that is diagnosed with Down syndrome and so many aborted, even higher in some countries. When you hear that and you know that, what goes through your mind? And what do you think needs to be done to change that and ensure that no preborn child is discriminated against and aborted simply because of an extra chromosome?
So it's crushing as, you know, the mother to this beautiful boy who has Down syndrome. It's just crushing to me to think that there's this stigma around Down syndrome and that people are finding out in utero and then saying, no, I don't want a baby like Will. So personally, it's just, it's absolutely crushing to me. I think that what we need to do to fight against this, there's so much advocacy that happens after birth, right? We're all fighting for the rights of our children, better education, for them to have better wages with jobs. But we have to bring the fight back to before birth. We have to be fighting and celebrating and shouting the worth of our children from the moment they are created. They are created in the image and likeness of God. And that's what we need the world to see. Because in the United States, you know, the number of babies being aborted, it's not going down. If anything, it's going up. And so where our advocacy is falling short. And so with Team Iron Will, we are determined to shout the worth of our children, of every human being created with an extra chromosome, because they bring so much light and love into this world. I mean, it's like having a little piece of heaven in our home. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, I always say they're like little angels, and your Will is a little angel. It's so adorable. Thank you for sharing his story with us and the pictures of your beautiful family and talking to us about all this and what you do. Kathy, God bless you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, news to brighten your day. Changes are coming to the dome of St. Peter's Basilica, and we'll tell you all about it. Plus, a movie tells the story of the days before the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Something light from the Vatican, a change to St. Peter's Basilica just in time for Easter. Holy See says that the 14,000-ton, 5-century-old dome will debut new lighting. The state-of-the-art project will, quote, further enhance the dome and create a striking atmosphere while making Michelangelo's masterpiece easier for pilgrims to see. And while St. Patrick's Day was Monday, events marking Irish culture have extended throughout the week. Last night in Rome, people at Basilica San Silvestri in Capite gathered to hear about Monsignor Hugh Flaherty, who was called the Irish Schindler who took on the Third Reich. EWTN contributor Valentina Di Tonato has more.
Do not attempt to provoke me. I had you invited here. Give you a warning. After tonight, if you take one step outside the Vatican territory, you'll be arrested on sight.
Colonel, do I get the feeling that you'd like to put a crimp in my social life?
Gregory Peck portrayed Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty in the 1983 movie The Scarlet and the Black. Despite the movie, O'Flaherty is hardly a household name. The irony, he may have liked it that way. The Monsignor's story began during World War II. As the Nazi regime tightened its grip on Rome, the danger for the city's Jewish population and prisoners of war escalated. But Monsignor O'Flaherty had a calling to hide them in the monasteries and apartments throughout the city. During that 10 months of occupation, O'Flaherty was credited with saving 6,500 Jewish people. Archbishop John Kennedy is the Vatican's top official on abuse cases and is also driven by a deep sense of justice, just like O'Flaherty.
because I don't think too many Irish priests have had the privilege of working in the Vatican, and I think I might be the next priest after Hugh O'Flaherty. I felt this sort of tingling that there was this bridge connecting the two of us, coming from different parts of the country, living in different times, trying to react to two different types of situation, the Nazi invasion of Europe and the work that I do is in the analysis, the examination of cases of principally child sexual abuse of minors by clerics.
The Catholic resistance against Nazism is well documented. Pope Pius XI first denounced the Nazi regime in his 1937 encyclical Mit brennender Sorge, accusing them of sowing tares of suspicion, discord, hatred, calumny, and hostility to Christ and his church. And during World War II, Pope Pius XII gave 12,000 Jews and displaced people refuge in his summer residence at Castel Gandolfo on Vatican territory. After all these years, that same sense of justice is one of the driving forces that continues to move the church to protect the most vulnerable.
Humanly, it's difficult. I mean, when you actually read the case and see what has been done to children, everything within you is churning in many ways. But we've been given the grace to be trained in law, and we have a certain objectivity. So we judge the case on two things, on the truth of the case and then the application of justice.
Eve Parnell is an Irish artist and founder of the Irish Cultural House in Rome. And she says helping people is just in the Irish blood.
Ireland has, like everywhere, has a long history, but we also have a long memory. And I think part of our DNA are all those memories of all the people who had to leave during the famines, during conquests. We had, everybody knows, we had 700 years of colonization from England. And I think that maybe makes us a little bit unique, and that also makes us conscious and maybe brings a bit of compassion into our DNA and our genetics and our memories, that when we see others in difficulty, a lot of us want to help.
In Rome, Valentina Di Donato, EWTN News Nightly.
And finally, today, a new movie released just in time for Lent and the weeks leading to Easter seeks to take a new look at one of the ultimate acts of love and sacrifice from our Lord.
Whoever eats my flesh, drinks my blood, remain in me and I in them.
And The Last Supper is from Pinnacle Peak Pictures. It tells the story of the days before the crucifixion of Christ through the eyes of those who walked alongside him. The film seeks to invite the audience into a story of redemption and grace. And for more, we turn now to Chris Tomlin, who is the executive producer of The Last Supper. Chris, great to be with you, and congratulations on the film. I know one of the things that you've said about the movie is that it's, quote, theologically accurate. Tell us more about that and why that is so important.
Yeah, this has been it's been awesome to launch this movie, help be a part of this, The Last Supper. Incredible first weekend and just amazing. And I loved one of the things when I first saw the movie, when I first got involved with it, I loved how it just really brings the Bible to life. It brings those black and white pages to color in such a beautiful way. And I think when people think of, you know, movies and Jesus, they sometimes think of Hollywood and what does Hollywood know about, you know, Jesus, and they're going to mess this whole thing up. And I love it. These people behind this movie have a really heart for the Lord, and I want people to, you know, connect with God and ministry as much as a movie. And so I just love how it really is so much grounded and rooted in God's word in such a powerful way. I mean, when Jesus speaks, there's very few words in this movie when Jesus speaks that is not in red from the scriptures. And so it's pretty powerful. And obviously there's liberties that are taken to fill in some of the gaps of the story and build the story. But you really get a sense of this moment in the life of Jesus coming to life. And you see it through Peter. You see it through Judas. You see it through different eyes, through a different lens than you normally would see it. And I think that has been what has most moved people from the comments that I've seen, at least.
That's beautiful. Did you learn anything new about The Last Supper and the life of Jesus through this movie?
You know, I saw it. I think I saw it brand new through the eyes of the different lens. I've always seen it as Jesus breaking the bread and holding the cup, and you know him. It was his moment of saying, "This is when. This is why I came. This is it's for this moment. It's this is." And he's trying to explain it to his friends, right? But I've never really seen it through the lens of sitting at that table was Judas, was Peter, was Thomas. I've always known that, but to see it, and I think I've been a Christian most of my life. I don't know why I've really never thought that when Jesus broke that bread and held that cup and said, "This is my body. This is my blood, and it's for you," that he knew that they would betray him, that someone sitting at that table would deny him, someone sitting at that table would doubt he would doubt him, all these kind of things. And yet he's like, "This is for you." And I thought, man, I could just put myself at that table because I'm all those things. Mm-hmm. All those things are in me as well. And I think all of us feel those things and sense those things and to know that at this moment, you know, Jesus did that for us. And that moment changed the world. Those guys went and changed the entire world. And that message is still changing the world today.
Before I let you go, Chris, where can people go to find more information about the movie?
The Last Supper.movie is where you can go to see the, if you want to see the trailer. I'm sure it's on YouTube as well. Last Supper.movies where you can see the trailer and stuff, and then hopefully find out what it's in theaters near you. It just expanded greatly. Went from this allotment of theaters to doubled that over the weekend, and so hopefully it's getting to you and you can go see it. I think you'll really love it.
I think we will too. Chris, thank you so much. Can't wait to see it. God bless you.
Thank you. You as well.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.